Welcome, Representative Stover.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Senator Beebe Center, Representative Hassenfass, and distinguished members of the Joint Standing Committee on Criminal Justice and Public Safety. I am Representative Holly Stover, and I'm here to present today LD 532. Thank you. A bill to increase the accountability of people who are volitionally violent towards healthcare workers. This bill does not impact individuals who have a behavioral health diagnosis and are not in control of their actions. In addition to my work in the legislature, I serve on the board of Maine Health Lincoln Hospital based in Damariscotta, Maine. As a member of that board, I gain insight into some of the struggles our hospitals and healthcare workers are facing. As you know, workforce shortages are plaguing our healthcare industry, resulting in loss of access to crucial services in some cases. While there are many reasons for this shortage, one of the most important and distressing is the level of violence that our healthcare workers face on a regular basis as they take care of patients. We hear all too frequently about nurses, doctors, CNAs, and others who have been threatened, kicked, hit, and spit on by angry patients. These incidents occur both in the hospital and in outpatient settings, and they can arise when patients are frustrated with long waits, angry about policies, or experience other triggers. In 2024, Maine Health tracked 688 violent incidents that resulted in injuries across its care settings. These incidents can be psychologically and physically harmful to our team members, with many resulting in temporary loss of ability to do their jobs. They also result in burnout, recruitment challenges, early retirements, and people leaving the healthcare profession altogether. Last session, this committee advanced and the full legislature passed LD 1119, a bill that made it a felony to assault a healthcare worker in the emergency department. Thank you for that, as it provides our ED care teams with comfort in knowing that we have their backs, that the state respects and acknowledges some of the greatest challenge they face in their jobs. Why, though, should this law be limited to emergency department workers? Data shows that violent incidents occur across all settings, including outpatient offices, inpatient units, and other services and programs. This bill is intended to send the message to all patients, families, and others who interact with healthcare workers that the state is not willing to tolerate volitional assaults on healthcare workers, regardless of where those assaults occur. Thank you for listening, and I hope that you will join me in supporting all of our healthcare workers by passing this bill.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Stover. This seems like a reasonable bill, and I say that because I see that I co-sponsored it. As a side note, this morning in one of our bills that we heard, we had someone, and I believe it was an attorney, who said, well, you passed a law to make it illegal to assault someone in the emergency department at the hospital. You haven't seen that reduce assaults, have you? And nobody knows the answer to that question. So I noticed that you quoted that there were 688 violent incidents in 2024. If you don't know the answer to this, maybe somebody's coming who does. But have we seen a reduction in the short period of time? And secondly, have we seen someone brought to trial or arraigned since the law passed for violence against the emergency room?
Thank you, Representative Nutting, and I don't have the answer. And if no one has it sitting here behind me that was going to testify, we can certainly get that for the work session.
For the work session, Liz. Thank you.
Representative Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative, for being here. I fully support this bill. I think it was the last session. My daughter is one of those nurses that left the healthcare profession full time because of multiple assaults in the ER. And so this is important. And on the periphery or on the surface, as it stands, I support this. However, I do worry a little bit about creep when we talk about a person employed or contracted by a healthcare entity and what we traditionally see as healthcare workers. So do you know, because we don't aren't getting little copies of Title 22, how far out that reach goes? I mean, were we talking about somebody who gets a contract to deliver water to the hospital twice a week? I mean, is that someone that's contracted, is that considered a healthcare worker? And if that guy gets assaulted while he's driving water, but he's 40 miles from the hospital, is that guy, is someone get charged with a felony for that over addition? You know who's covered under that Title 22, Section 1718?
I'm really not trying to pass the buck, Representative Perkins, but I think we can further define that in the work session. I don't have a off-the-cuff answer.
Yeah, if we could get that, that'd be great.
I think I'm going to hope that, I'm going to assume, making we know about assumptions that, that might have come up during the hearing on the emergency department bill, and maybe we can look back at that as well.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there other questions for Representative Stover? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Is there anybody that would like to speak in favor of this bill? Beg your pardon? Okay.
All right, thank you. Senator, or BB Senator, and everyone who's a part of this work committee today, my name is Miranda Chadbourn. I'm a program manager for the workplace violence prevention work at Maine Health, and I'm here today to testify in strong support of LD 532. 2 years ago, I stood beside before this committee in favor of LD 1119, which clarified an existing Maine statute to make clear that it is a felony to assault any healthcare worker in the emergency department. And this was signed into law of 2023 by our governor. Today, I stand before this committee asking you to expand that statute to include all of our health cares, regardless of the setting in which they are providing care. Very importantly, LD 532 seeks to expand the responsibility to those who intentionally, knowingly, and recklessly cause bodily injury to a healthcare worker. I'd like to provide two examples that have occurred recently in Maine Health facilities over the last year, both outside the emergency department, by patients who had no active behavioral or crisis impairments. Last week, I interviewed a nurse who had been punched in the face by a patient. The assault resulted in facial fractures. She was out of work for months and ultimately required permanent reassignment. This event occurred in an oncology inpatient unit, and the patient was angry that he had been woken up. I'm currently working on a case where a nurse was providing medication for a patient in a shared room, and the second patient on the other side of the room wanted her attention. When she asked him to wait until she was done, he didn't wait. He got out of his bed, walked over to her, grabbed her by the ponytail, and yelled, "No, I need your attention now." She was out of work for 2 days related to a sprained neck, and at first the patient denied his actions, and then later he agreed that he had only grabbed her by a little piece of her hair. So how big is this problem? I'm a numbers person, so here's some statistics. Due to the crisis facing our long-term healthcare systems here in Maine, Maine Medical Center Portland has opened a 42-bed nursing unit dedicated to patients who are medically cleared for discharge but have no safe discharge disposition. Last week, I reviewed these patients in our transitional care unit, and there were 36 that were admitted. 11 were admitted for having a high risk of violence. During the month of February, Maine Medical Center Portland cared for 1,181 patients who demonstrated violent behaviors. That's roughly 2 violent events an hour. These events include vulgarity, threats, physical, and sexual assault. In 2024 alone, Maine Health's employee department, this is a statistic that was shared earlier, saw 688 employees for injuries sustained while providing care for violent patients, resulting in 3,528 days our care team members were on light duty, and 715 days of lost time, 134 were reported to OSHA. Thank you so much for taking the time to review this bill. It's important that over the next 10 years, we look at where our healthcare is needed and how best to support our providers. If you have any questions, I'm happy to take them and do my best now.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Yes.
Representative, thank you, Madam Chair. So you're self-identified as the numbers person, and you've heard my question previously. So for the work session, if you had some numbers that showed.
Yeah, so we've been looking at numbers at Maine Medical Center. I also work with the Hospital Association. That's something that we're collecting. One of the things that we do try to see is how many of these cases are going to trial. And that's been really hard for us to get that information from the district attorney's office. So I think some of the work in this work group would be really important to see where things are going and how that's happening.
Are there other questions? Yes, Representative Lickner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So thank you for being here.
Sure.
Just you mentioned vulgarity here. So I think there are other statutes that cover, I don't know the term in law, but just, you know, when somebody is acting in an unreasonable manner. So are we talking about charging an individual with a Class C crime who like is expressing verbal
I think that
expressing verbal displeasure with their treatment in the hospital.
In the review of the bill, it's quoted to say intentionally, knowingly, and reckless causing bodily harm. That piece of, you know, verbal assault and that constant beratement that our colleagues are seeing every day in the healthcare setting is really to highlight the overall concern, knowing that really what we're looking for in criminality is when there is a bodily injury that is due to intentional, unknowingly and reckless behavior directed towards someone providing healthcare.
Great. And thank you for answering that question.
Sure.
An EMT, I'm aware of, you know, the treatment that people are subjected to and dealing with people who are routinely on the worst days of their lives. So
sure. Thank you.
Representative McIntyre.
Gotcha. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your testimony today. As I start to learn more of the mens rea aspects, you've bolded and underlined intentionally, knowingly, and recklessly, specifically on knowingly. Since LD 1119 was introduced, what efforts have been made to get this message out that this is something that people just should not engage?
Yeah, I'm going to speak to that from really the part of the community that I work closest with, which is Maine Health.
Yep.
Maine Health as a community has invested hundreds of thousands of dollars into educating our care team members to make sure that we're doing everything we can to protect them. I also know that there are other hospitals throughout the state of Maine who are doing the same thing in a unified work group. And then trying to educate our colleagues who are providing that direct patient care what their rights are when it comes to criminal proceedings. And as healthcare teams, we don't necessarily want to see criminal action. So it really is that moral discussion for the colleagues who are impacted, what is right for them and what is right for our patients. We have a moral and ethical responsibility to care for people, and we also need help. So thank you for your question.
Representative Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does Maine Health conduct, to your knowledge, does Maine Health conduct exit interviews for employees?
What a fabulous question. I don't know that. We do workplace violence risk assessments at all of our environments, and so we are looking at our folks who experience healthcare-related violence, how is that impacting them when they choose to stay? I do not know if we do exit interviews in each of our locations, and I don't believe that in the locations that I work in, we do.
Okay, so I'm going to ask, but you probably don't have the numbers. So can you tell me roughly how many workers Maine Health has lost over the last couple of years, specifically because of work?
I do not have that number. I'm sorry.
Okay. Would it be possible before the work session if you could find that out, maybe?
I can work with our government affairs folks, and they can see what they can do.
Thank you so much.
Well, and even bring it to the work session.
Yeah, well, and I'm happy. Yes. Let me help. I want to help.
Okay. Awesome. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
There. Good afternoon, Senator Beebe Center, committee members. My name is Lisa Harvey McPherson, and I'm here today to speak in support of this bill on behalf of Northern Light Health. In 2021, the legislature created the task force to study the process for bringing criminal cases in situations of violence against healthcare workers. We attended every task force meeting and provided information on incidences of violence against our workforce. The task force was actually the first time ever that a comprehensive group assembled to focus on healthcare worker violence and the process for bringing criminal cases. We strongly advocated that the task force recommend that the crime of assault includes healthcare workers in every hospital patient care setting. There was support for this, but it was not unanimous. In the interest of unanimous agreement, expansion was limited to crimes against employees and contracted staff in the emergency department. The bill before you today balances out the crime of assault against a healthcare worker. A nurse assaulted in a medical unit is just as violently assaulted as staff in our emergency department. Incidents of violence against our staff certainly predated COVID-19, but we did reach a peak of incidences in 2022 with a total of 834 events. Comparatively, we had 799 last year. We have a system-wide comprehensive approach to supporting our employees with the goal to eliminate acts of violence in our care settings. We have signage and posters throughout our facilities that advise patients and public. We have zero tolerance for acts of violence. Staff are trained in de-escalation techniques to manage behaviors. And we have silent alarm buttons that readily summon an emergency response team for assistance. Our You Report, We Support campaign encourages employees to report violence when it does occur, and we support them to report the crime to law enforcement, and we reach out to the local district attorneys and communicate with them regarding enforcement of the law when a crime of violence has occurred. I want to be clear that acts of violence occur everywhere our staff work. I'm going to talk about three examples outside of the emergency department. A patient became upset when he was told he could not take his own medications that were in his duffel bag. Security tried to prevent the patient from taking the medications. The patient struck the security person in the eye, leaving him bleeding and bruised. A nursing assistant was feeding a patient that did require assistance. Without warning, the patient punched the nursing assistant in the face during the feeding. And a home care nurse was completing a clinical assessment for wound care. And when she turned away from the patient violently hit her in the back of the head, pulled her by the hair, causing the nurse to fall to the floor. We've talked about verbal violence, and I just read all of these stories that our staff provided to me. It is horrific. It is horrific what they are exposed to for violence in terms of rhetoric. And it's real, and it can cause death. Last month, a gunman held ICU staff in a Pennsylvania hospital hostage, killing the police officer and injuring five people. And in 2023, a 63-year-old home health nurse was murdered during a home visit in Connecticut. We ask that you support this important legislation. And I welcome any questions that you have. And if allowable, I can answer Representative Perkins' question about contracted staff.
Representative Perkins would love to have you answer this question.
Okay. This was a subject of lengthy discussion with the task force. And we included contracted staff because in many emergency departments, the security team is contracted. And they often experience the greatest volume of assaults. And we also may have contracted temporary nurses and others that are in that emergency department who are equally harmed.
Follow up?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm not generally opposed to having contracts with staff because I understand that, obviously. Yeah. I was just curious as to if there were any limitations on how far that would go, you know, if there were any, I hate to use the word guardrails in there, but, you know, but that was, you know, I am still curious about that. And I guess we'll leave that for the work session. Mm-hmm. But I would like to ask you if the same question that I asked the previous person who testified, Northern Light System, do they conduct exit interviews? Yeah. And do you know how many people you've lost over the last couple of years, specifically because of patient on provider violence? And if you don't know, would you be able to provide that possible?
I will check with HR.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Representative Luckner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks again for being here. I'm just looking at this chart. Mm-hmm. And it looks as though, and I noted that in your testimony, you said in 2022, there was a high of 834 mm-hmm. events, sort of mid-pandemic. And then in 2024, it went down. But it looks as though from this chart that in 2023, it was actually the lowest. Did you have a number for 2023? I'd be curious.
2023, I can, I I can make this really big on my computer and add up these little numbers. These numbers are hard to see. I can have that for the work session. I can go through and just bullet out what they are by year.
Okay.
But it's important to understand the trend line.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you. Yes.
Representative. Not meaning to encourage Representative Perkins on the issue of contractor providers, but I do have an example that might fit.
Yeah.
In my advanced age with Medicare, I have a PPO insurance program that provides me an annual home visit and review by a licensed nurse, not contracted by a hospital, but as a licensed nurse. Might that cover someone? Should I go off the handle and assault that person?
I believe the bill before you expands the crime when it occurs to an employee or contracted staff with a licensed healthcare entity. So hospitals are licensed, nursing homes are licensed, home care agencies are licensed. It expands it in that way.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Should we start looking at people who are online? Please.
I'll be quick, Senator. Senator Beebe, Senator, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Austin. I'm here on behalf of the Maine Hospital Association. You've heard from my colleagues. Let me just make a few brief comments. We're also very supportive of the legislation and participated in the legislature's task force a few years ago, looking at how these crimes can be brought forward more readily. One thing we are trying to do that you've asked about is get a clear data set and a clear baseline. And that actually, I have a colleague at the Hospital Association who's been working on these violence issues extensively. And one of the first things we did is try to make sure every hospital was somewhat on the same page in defining the incidence of violence so that we can start collecting that data. And you have a clear time series. So to get to Representative Nutting's question, are we seeing changes when policy does change? What's quite disturbing, we're collecting this data now monthly. About 2/3 of our members are filling out the surveys. We can't make our members respond to us. But in December of 2024, there was almost 300 incidents among these 20 hospitals. In January, there was another 260. That's monthly. Roughly half are probably verbal assaults only. The other half are physical, and most physical assaults are accompanied by verbal as well. So it's quite significant. We have some excerpts of stories. You heard a few from my colleagues. Here are some more. The vulgarity was left in there. The assaults are not confined to the emergency room. They can happen anywhere on campus. You can't control everything. We can't control everything, but we do believe it is very important for the legislature to send this clear signal that this has to stop. We've got to be a little bit more clear with the public, and maybe having a locational-based felony isn't as clear as it needs to be. Every year, the federal government, OSHA, puts out their data on the most dangerous workplaces. Hospitals and nurses often face the most significant workplace violence threats and reality. So let me try to briefly answer the questions. On the contracted, let us look at that. We'll double check the language and make sure it's as clear as possible. But yes, originally it was, since the statute was built in the emergency room and we had contracted security staff there, we wanted to make sure they were covered. As you contemplate expanding the statute to other settings, let's make sure that the contracted language is clear enough as to who it might cover. And I do believe, as drafted, it would cover home health incidents, which is a very risky situation for nurses to be out in someone's home and face threats of violence. So I know you've had a long day with that. I'd wrap up and be happy to take any questions.
Are there any questions? Yes, Representative Looking.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I would be interested just to see compared to 2023 or, you know, correlating with the pandemic or the number of assaults that we are seeing just over maybe like the last 5 years. That would be super helpful for me.
I'll see what we can do. We didn't start collecting this data until recently. It wasn't until after the state task force that one of the first things that we had to decide is, all right, is everyone has had an obligation to collect this data. It wasn't clear whether people were collecting it with a consistent definition. So that was actually a first threshold issue. Can we make sure everybody's collecting this data consistently? And then we at the Hospital Association will start to collect it. We had not been collecting this 5 years ago. We are now. Some of our members, as you've seen from the Northern Light data, have it, and I'll see what we can find. And I think the Department of Labor may have some workplace injury data, but we'll do what we can.
Are there other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to go to our Zoom people who have been waiting on Zoom. Sarah Radcliffe.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Senator Beebe Center, Representative Hassenfuss, and members of the Committee on Criminal Justice and Public Safety. My name is Sarah Radcliffe, and I serve as Executive Director of the Home Care and Hospice Alliance of Maine. The Alliance is submitting testimony in support of LD 532, an act to protect healthcare workers by addressing assaults in healthcare settings. In home care and hospice, the Home Care and Hospice Alliance of Maine is a network of home care, hospice, and personal care providers across our state, delivering in-home care to older adults and disabled individuals of all ages, allowing them to stay in their homes and communities. The Alliance would like to thank Representative Stover for introducing this bill, which broadens the statute to ensure protection for all healthcare workers employed by state-licensed entities. Those who provide in-home care walk into environments that are inherently unpredictable. Unlike the controlled setting of a hospital or clinic, home care workers are frequently alone, providing essential services in private residences. This isolation leaves them profoundly vulnerable to assault. The data speaks for itself. A recent survey of our members reveals a disturbing reality. Of those who reported being assaulted while providing home care, 25% were threatened with harm, 38% suffered physical assault, 50% experienced sexual harassment, and a shocking 100% have endured verbal abuse from patients or their family members. These statistics are not mere numbers. They represent the real and present danger faced by our home care workers who dedicate their lives to caring for others. The tragic loss of a life in Connecticut, a home care worker murdered by her patient in 2023, is a stark and painful reminder of the human cost of inaction. While Connecticut has responded with legislation providing grant funding for safety improvements, mandatory training, and more comprehensive patient referral information, including criminal and psychiatric history, we must prioritize the safety of our workers to prevent such losses here. This bill is a necessary step toward ensuring that home care workers receive the same protections as their counterparts in other healthcare settings. We urge your support to protect those who dedicate their lives to caring for others. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I will answer any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Ms. Radcliffe. Are there any questions for Ms. Radcliffe? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak in favor of this legislation? Is there? Oops, it's fine. It's just updating. So there's another person who's in?
Not for this stuff.
Okay. Is there anybody who would like to speak against this legislation? Please.
Senator Beebe Center, Representative Hassenfuss, and members of the Joint Standing Committee on Criminal Justice and Public Safety. My name is Emily Mott, and I am an attorney at Disability Rights Maine, Maine's protection and advocacy agency for people with disabilities. Disability Rights Maine is here today in opposition to LD 532, an act to protect healthcare workers by addressing assaults in healthcare settings. As you may have heard, LD 532 seeks to expand the scope of assault on healthcare workers from emergency rooms to many other healthcare settings and increase the penalty to a Class C crime. While DRM appreciates the intent of protecting healthcare workers from harm, we are also deeply concerned that this expansion will not accomplish that goal and will only serve to disproportionately impact individuals with mental health conditions by criminalizing disability-related behavior. For the purposes of this hearing, I will focus and summarize a little bit my written testimony on the bill's potential consequences for individuals with mental health conditions who are receiving care in psychiatric hospitals and community-based mental health residences. Psychiatric hospitals operate under federal and state regulations that allow for the use of restraint in specific circumstances. Both state and federal laws acknowledge that restraint may be employed only when necessary to prevent serious physical injury to the patient or others and must be discontinued at the earliest possible time. In the context of these state and federal laws, it is foreseeable that some bodily injury, as defined in the statute as physical pain, physical illness, or any impairment of physical condition, could result during the course of a restraint. If incidents related to restraints, which could currently be charged as a Class D misdemeanor, which is up to 364 days in county jail and a fine of up to $2,000, are elevated to a Class C, it will unfairly criminalize individuals with psychiatric disabilities who are already in a vulnerable state and are receiving treatment in a facility that is meant to provide care and not punishment. Community-based residential facilities for individuals with mental illness are funded through Medicaid under Section 97, Community Residences for Persons with Mental Illness. They're facilities that are designed to provide a structured, supported environment for individuals who require residential care due to their significant mental health needs. Admission to these facilities requires an assessment using a LOCUS level of care utilization system for psychiatric and addiction services, which explicitly evaluates an individual's risk of harm and observes that this dimension of the assessment acknowledges that, in many cases, unintentional harm may result from misinterpretations of reality due to the nature of their mental illness. Further, staff working in these facilities must complete a full mental health rehabilitation technician certification, which includes training in behavioral intervention techniques. These programs are designed to prevent harm and provide treatment in a supportive environment. Currently, individuals who engage in behaviors that result in bodily injury can be charged under existing assault laws, increasing the penalty to a Class C, which is punishable by up to 5 years incarceration and a $5,000 fine. Will disproportionately affect individuals with mental health conditions by increasing incarceration rates, discouraging individuals from seeking treatment, contradicting the fundamental principles of mental health care, and causing further marginalization. Again, we recognize and appreciate the importance of protecting healthcare workers from harm, but we strongly believe that this bill will not achieve the desired outcomes and will instead have harmful unintended consequences. We respectfully ask the committee to vote ought not to pass. Thank you for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Mott, for being here. So right now, if someone is in, someone with a mental health disability is in a care facility and they assault somebody, there is a mechanism for charging them currently. Is that correct?
I do not do criminal law, but my understanding is that the misdemeanor... Class D assault charge and the aggravated assault charge, those can certainly be applied and charged to somebody who's living in a mental health facility.
Okay, I appreciate it. And I'm trying to go by your test. Sure. Just so you're aware. I'm not trying to.
No, I just wanted to clarify.
I'm not trying to get down any gotcha.
No.
So I'm just trying to understand.
Of course.
Okay, thank you. So obviously, and you may not be aware, because I understand you don't do criminal law, but prosecutors and police officers and everybody that's involved in this has some discretion in those processes. Are you aware of that, or would you agree with that? Okay.
Yep.
So I'm only asking for my benefit. Currently, do you have any idea the number of people that are in this realm that currently get charged for assaults?
I'm not aware of how many are currently charged for assault, but I can say that the number of individuals in psychiatric hospitals are going to be over thousands each year, and there are 844 beds of the community residences for persons with mental illness, and that's the beds that people are discharged from and come from. So there's a lot that is possible, but okay. No, I don't know the amount charged.
So would you say, and I'm going to ask you to clarify your statement, you say it's going to be thousands.
Mm-hmm.
Is that thousands of assaults or thousands of prosecutions based on just elevating the penalty?
Neither. Thousands of patients who okay. are potentially subject to this bill.
Okay. But that wouldn't change necessarily that level of discretion.
Yeah, I couldn't speak to the level of discretion.
Okay. No, that's fair. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Representative Ardell, did you have a question?
I withdraw.
Oh, okay. Representative Lochner.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here. Do we have an idea of the number of assaults that happen on healthcare workers in which the person committing the assault either at the time or later was diagnosed with a mental health issue? Or is, I don't know if that's possible to determine, but I think that would be very helpful for the work session.
I don't have that information currently, but I'd be more than happy to try and provide any information we could at the work session.
That'd be great. Thanks.
Representative Bunker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for being here. I'm familiar with your agency's work as I'm a member of the Deaf Advisory Council.
Sure. Wonderful.
I hear representations from what you do for your clients. I took a real interest in and underlined a phrase that I hadn't seen before on misinterpretation of reality and mm-hmm. someone dealing with a mental health crisis. That's an interesting, that's a very politically correct choice of phrases on that. That makes it more palatable for what is very tough situations. But to my question, at the very end, you ask about needing to focus on improving treatment options that provide appropriate support for both individuals and their healthcare providers. What might some of those things be?
I don't have solutions today, but I can tell you that this bill is not that.
At the work session, I'd be interested in any suggestions that you might have on those types of sure. solutions that we could work on. Thank you.
Representative Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a request for the work session from Will, if I can bring that up at this time.
Okay.
So I know that OPEGA has recently looked at the number of assaults over at Riverview. Is it possible? Can you reach out and see if they can find out or if they have in their data set the number of prosecutions that have resulted from those?
Say with OPEGA?
OPEGA has recently done a set of data on that. If you could reach out and find out if any actual charges have risen from any of those. All right. Thanks.
Representative Lochner.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if you have the answer to this or if anybody else does. For the work session or today, I seem to remember last session when we passed the bill to elevate the penalty, there was a lot of discussion around, it seemed to be that police were hesitant to enforce the Class D simple assault charge. And if that seemed to be a big problem with the hospitals being unable to perhaps get law enforcement to stop the behavior when it was happening. So I would be interested to see if, since we've elevated the penalty, if police have been more willing to go into hospitals to like sort of stop things from happening, because that seemed to be a theme last session that I'm not hearing today. So I don't know if you have any anecdotal evidence or if anybody in the room has more information about that. I'd like to hear it.
Sure. The one thing I can point you to that I'm not sure if it has that specifically, but I know that there was a Maine Monitor article that I cited in my testimony that was wanting to look into what has happened since that went into effect.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
McIntyre.
Thank you for being part of the discussion today. I just want to get it clear in my head. This is already a Class C crime, correct? Because the testimony here says increase it to a Class C, but in statute, it's already a Class C. So I'm conflicted.
My reading of the statute is that it would increase the
area of coverage.
Yes. So for that area of coverage, it would increase it from a Class D to a Class C in the increased area of coverage instead of just in an emergency room.
Not sure,
but I think the sponsor might have a better answer for that than I.
Okay, thank you.
Perhaps during the work session, we could clarify it. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak against this bill? Please.
Well, thank you, members of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee. My name is Carlene Mahaffey. My pronouns are she, hers. I am here on my own time as a current resident of Gardner, and I am testifying in opposition to LD 532. I do not deny that people are being hurt, of course, but the hurt is not one-sided. I know a lot of people who've experienced violence and hurt at the hands of those who are there to care for them, and I didn't want to get into stories like other people have, because I have friends, I know a lot of people who've experienced horrible violence at the hands of people who are supposed to be providing care. So who are we to say that one person's experience of hurt is more valid than another's? I wanted to use my time to ask you to think about the consequences a bill like this could have. I ask you to ask yourselves, is a bill like this just a knee-jerk reaction to very emotional situations? Is a bill like this just exploiting another complicated situation, further deepening us versus them by pitting one side against the other? Is a bill like this taking a stance and declaring one side to be good and the other side to be bad? And in doing so, does it disregard the facts, the details of the situation, and the preceding events that led to the tragedy? A topic like this is heavy, laden with stories of awful tragedies that occur during the delivery of help and the receiving of help. I ask you to please pause and consider the implications and probable unconsidered consequences a bill like this could have. I ask you to vote ought not to pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak against this bill?
I'll take it off this time, so I'll hand it back to me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator Beebe Senator, members of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee. My name is Matt Morgan. I'm the president-elect of the Maine Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. MACDL is here in opposition to LD 532. Like others who have spoken in opposition, we're not here because we're insensitive to the plight of healthcare workers. My wife is working in Maine Med right now. This is happening. There's no doubt that these violent acts are happening, that these statements, these vulgarities are happening, and it's a shame they are. The question that this committee has as a criminal justice committee is, what's the penological purpose of making this a felony? What do we achieve other than perhaps to maybe make ourselves feel a little better about something? And with that, I would suggest that a penalty of up to 364 days in jail for misdemeanor assault contact is sufficient regardless of the identity of the victim. Felony assaults should not be based on victim identity, but on the severity of the conduct. We've heard about someone with a fractured face. That's a felony right there. Serious bodily injury. There's no question that if a nurse had broken bones in his or her face, that a prosecutor would charge that as a felony, and they should. If there were sexual assaults, we heard testimony about that. Those are felonies, and we know how seriously the prosecutor's offices across the state take sexual assault. Offensive contact of any kind, though, just because the victim happens to work in a healthcare setting, should not be a felony. There's been some testimony to suggest that this bill would not affect people in mental health crises. That's not what the words knowing, intelligent, or intelligently and recklessly mean. That does not exclude that. Many people who are suffering mental health crises can be found to have acted intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly. They can and will be prosecuted under a bill like this. And it's more likely they will be because people who are in hospital settings sometimes are in crises. It's important to know that judges do have the ability to increase penalties based on the victim and facts and circumstances of a case. That's specifically included in sentencing laws in Title 17A. And in the event that the victim is a healthcare worker, and that's an aggravating factor, a judge can give someone an additional penalty. However, assault cases, an average sort of barroom brawl, if you will, usually end up in about a $300 fine. So a judge might increase a penalty to, say, 3 days in jail for someone who does something like that as a misdemeanor. But do they need to go up to 5 years? Is a felony something that we need? And MACDL's position is absolutely not. There's no penological purpose here that's being achieved by turning these crimes into felonies. Same applies in the home healthcare setting. Many elderly people in those situations might find themselves frustrated. They might lash out if they lack patience, and they might cause what the law defines as offensive physical contact. That would make it a felony. Someone who could be in their 80s with no prior criminal history now is looking at up to 5 years in prison and losing perhaps federal benefits because of a law like this. It serves no penological purpose. MACDL does not oppose it because we're insensitive to healthcare workers and their plight, but for the reason that it does not serve any penological purpose. So with that, we oppose, and I'm happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Thank you. Representative Lookner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I got to step out here momentarily for a call, but there are two things I wanted to ask. Firstly, what other professions is it a Class C crime? So obviously, well, I think police, I don't know if like correction officers, every year there seems to be, in years past, we had bills about teachers, about transit workers, like all these various professions who want to see the penalty elevated towards them. So I'd like to see what professions for currently for whom it's a Class C crime to commit an assault against. And then secondly, I think you already sort of touched on it, but aggravated assault. So if somebody does have a significant injury, then the person committing the assault could be charged with like a Class C aggravated assault. Is that correct?
Yes, I'll take your questions in reverse order. So serious bodily injury, prolonged convalescence. These are some of the factors that can result in felony charges. Again, a fractured orbital bone is without a question a felony assault that's routinely charged because that's a part of the face that gets broken when someone gets hit in the face hard. And that would be a felony, a Class C charge. I looked up while sitting here the answer to your other question. Assuming it's all within Chapter 31, it appears assaults on officers, which I do understand to include correctional officers, law enforcement, dogs, perhaps. These are the specialized classes. They may not all be felonies. Medical service provider and law enforcement horses and firefighters. I know for a fact, law enforcement officers and correctional officers, I'm unsure if every one of those are felonies, but each of those have been identified as, I guess, special categories or classes, if you will, under Chapter 32.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to speak against this legislation?